Welcome to Spirituality, Motivation, and Inspiration. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Anson Matthews. This half-hour program contains readings from the websites of Spirituality and Health, Yoga Journal, and Guidepost magazines, as well as a variety of other inspiring resources. We'll begin our reading today from Guidepost magazine. And our first story is Positive Action Fuels Hope by Fallon Gillespie. I'm not going back to group therapy. I refuse to be treated like that. The voice was so furious that I had to hold the phone away from my ear. Alicia Gonzalez, an Air Force veteran with post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. This was her second month at the Volunteers of America Homeless Shelter, a faith-based ministry where I work as a case manager for female veterans. She had a warm bed to sleep in. She'd gotten into therapy through the Department of Veteran Affairs, but every time I thought she was making progress, something like this would happen. Another setback. It was hard seeing her struggle. I had told her to call me anytime she needed to talk. That's a big part of my job, listening and offering coping strategies. Allie, I need for you to calm down and tell me what happened, I said. Did you try the deep breathing that we talked about? Silence. No, she finally said. I was so angry I didn't think of it. Someone in group therapy had smirked while Allie was talking. She'd felt disrespected, stomped out of the room. I talked to her until she calmed down. Still, I couldn't help but feel I was failing her. I was 25 and had only been working with veterans for a few months. In college, I'd majored in human development and dreamed of helping children. My first job here at the shelter had been working with children, but it was the veterans I felt drawn to. These women were driven, passionate about serving our country. They'd given so much of themselves only to come to us having lost almost everything, their jobs, their homes, their sense of purpose. Their stories were heartbreaking. Allie had been an Air Force nurse for 10 years. Her work was intense and demanding, and she loved it. Loved the fulfillment she got from caring for others. She treated men who'd been terribly wounded in action. To her, the trauma she'd suffered, sexual assault by a soldier, didn't qualify for the same kind of care. That's why when she started having nightmares, when she couldn't concentrate, when she felt angry all the time, she didn't get help. She'd left the Air Force and was in her second year of law school. With her brain overloaded by trauma, she couldn't focus and learn new material. She dropped out and went back to nursing. That was no better. Finally, she left her job with no income. She couldn't pay her rent. For almost 3 years, Allie lived in her truck. There was no money for a doctor. She didn't try the VA. That was for those who'd seen combat, she thought, not burned-out nurses. More than once, she considered killing herself. At least then her suffering would end. Allie told me all this at our first meeting. Her case manager at the Action Center, a local group that helps the homeless, sent her to the VA, where a doctor diagnosed her with PTSD and clinical depression and referred her to us. I want to help you, I said. There are lots of resources here, and at the VA, all I ask is that you tell me what's going on with you. Stay honest. Don't shut down. That way I can make sure you're getting the services you need. I'll try, she said. It's just hard. I used to feel as though what I did mattered. Now? Her voice trailed off. Before I could say anything, she stood and walked out of the room. 2 months later, I still felt as if I hadn't gotten through to Allie. Sometimes the things sending her into a rage were so minor. A piece of trash someone had tossed on the floor. It was hard for me to think of coping skills that didn't sound like I was criticizing her. With 100 women living at the shelter, 10 of them veterans, there were always going to be conflicts. How long would it be before she left us? Maybe this last episode in group therapy was the last straw. I had meetings with other clients already scheduled, so it was a couple of days before I could sit down with Allie. Finding something small you can feel good about can help you cope with anger and frustration, I suggested. It doesn't need to be some huge thing. Even as I said it, I wondered, was that really the best advice I could come up with? Allie sighed. I know, she said. I didn't think much of it until the following week when I saw her in the hallway with a trash bag, picking up a candy wrapper someone had dropped on the floor. Her mouth wasn't pressed into an angry line. Actually, she was smiling. What was going on? She must have seen the question in my eye. Someone's got to do it, she said. We don't have a cleaning service at the shelter, but soon Allie had the place sparkling. She vacuumed the hallways, emptied the trash, even cleaned the baseboards. A few weeks later, she started volunteering for a local library. She still called me a lot, but more and more it was to tell me how great a therapy session went. In March, Allie landed a job doing housekeeping at the VA, part of a program called Compensated Work Therapy that matches clients with low-stress occupations. She's found that church and yoga give her the calm to learn coping skills. And she's studying for the courses she'll need to renew her nursing license, her life again focused on helping others. I think God's looking out for me, she told me the other day. She's right about that, but Allie deserves a lot of the credit too. I think of her when my job feels overwhelming, and I remember that every journey starts with a single small step. And that's all the article, Positive Action Fuels Hope, from Guidepost Magazine. Our next story from Guidepost is How Could This Homeless Veteran Get Back on Track? By Bill Marinelli. Music is my first love. I can sit down at the piano and forget all about time and space, all about my problems. During the lowest moment in my life, music was my salvation, and I have pianos at two Volunteers of America facilities to thank. I'm a Vietnam-era vet, a Marine. After I got out of the service, I began a career in music, then became an iron worker. A few years ago, the one-bedroom bungalow I rented in Massachusetts was sold. The developer planned to tear it down. The property manager, Ray Randall, gave me 2 months rent-free to find a new place to live. Nothing affordable turned up. It didn't help that I'd been disabled from an accident in work and was living on Social Security. In quiet desperation and with the help of two friends, Jackie and Ann, I packed up my belongings and moved everything, including my electronic keyboard and my Yamaha upright, into storage. I slept in my Ford Focus wagon, thinking it would only be temporary, but weeks turned into months and the months into years. My car had become my home. The one thing that kept me alive was music. The wonderful gal at the storage unit would let me play my piano anytime, day or night. I would lose myself in music. I developed cataracts, but nothing could keep my fingers from finding the right keys. I hit my real low on Christmas Eve. I was driving down a narrow back road to where I would park my car and sleep at night. Another car came around the corner and into my lane. I veered to the right and struck a sewer drain. My car, my only home, lost its right front end. At that point, I really had no place to live. I moved in temporarily with a friend. I felt as if all hope for me had gone, as if my life were out of tune and would never get back on key again. Bruce Knight, a retired firefighter from Sanford, Maine, and president of the Patriots Raiders of Maine Chapter 1, drove down to get me. "Veterans do not live in their cars," my friend said, and that was that. He drove me to the York County Homeless Center, up in Maine, where I stayed 75 days. That's where I met with case managers from Volunteers of America's Veteran Services. They helped me move into their transitional housing, a place called the Arthur B. Hewitt House. I was able to sign up for Veterans Administration benefits through social worker Susie Whittington and get the cataract surgery I needed to recover my eyesight. Ken Darby, manager of Hewitt House, told me to move toward life and embrace it. One of the first things I did when I got settled was get my electronic keyboard out of storage and set it up in the TV room at Hewitt House. I'd play for hours, totally lost in the music. People would gather around my piano, humming, singing, clapping. It was nice. Then the VOA folks told me about the Paul Hazelton House for Seniors and the disabled Seiko, Maine. Every year, there's a Day of Caring held by the United Way and partners. We went to volunteer for the day. I struck gold. At Hazelton, I discovered a Steinway Baby Grand in the community room. I could barely restrain myself from sitting down and playing it immediately. "Play all you want, Missy," the supervisor said. Music, the universal medium that had helped me, was a joy to others. I'm doing much better these days. My health was improved, and I continue to play the piano for different audiences. When I think back to what Bruce said about veterans living in their cars, I realize how blessed I've been that people have stepped up and helped me when I couldn't see how to help myself. They took me in, put me back on the right path, encouraged me to make music. God gave me a gift, and VOA helped me share it. And that's all the article, "How Could This Homeless Veteran Get Back on Track?" from Guidepost Magazine. Next from Guidepost, advice for newlywed couples from happily married couples by Holly Leibowitz Rossi. While not all married couples have wonderful relationships, those who have achieved the magic of a deeply happy marriage have much to share with us. Most will admit that marital joy isn't magic at all, but a lifelong commitment to building and sustaining a meaningful life together in ways both big and seemingly small. Whether you're about to celebrate your wedding anniversary or just about to walk down the aisle, this advice for newlyweds from the happily married may make a difference in your relationship. First, greet each other every day. Claudia, who lives in California with her husband of 36 years, shares a daily routine that fosters communication first, life stresses second. Unless the house is on fire, don't greet one another at the door with a complaint about the job, kid, parent, in-law, or spouse, she says. We have a routine where the first person home greets the second one with "welcome back." The other answers "glad to be back." This is her advice for any newlyweds looking to start a daily positive habit. It's like saying goodnight. If you don't say it, you miss it. If you do, it provides completeness to the day. Next, have a daily date. Lisa and her husband meet every morning at the Starbucks in their hometown of Deerfield, Illinois, after they get their three teenage girls off to school. It's 20 minutes for coffee and conversation before they get into their days. Their phones are off and everything is on the table. Even if we're angry at each other, we meet there and work it out, Lisa says. This special time, more than trips to Tuscany in the south of France, has been the secret of our deep love and friendship. Next, assume the best of each other. Over 27 years of marriage, Mary and her husband, who lives in Montauk, California, have learned not to take personally quips and quirks that don't have to do with the relationship at all. This is their tip for newlyweds as well. "My husband and I were taking turns destroying each other's sleep with our snoring," Mary recalls. "I was so whacked out from lack of sleep, I convinced myself he was doing it to me. He, in turn, had been putting up with my snoring without complaining. We agreed to a gentle pillow tug to turn this snorer's head. If snoring goes on, one of us volunteers to sleep in the guest room for a night or two. The spirit of compromise and the understanding that we aren't out to get each other is vital." Fourth, be present to each other's pain. Stacy, who lives in Los Angeles, lost her mother recently. She worries about how grief might be affecting her husband of 8 years, and he's heartbroken that she is in so much pain. Their advice for newlyweds during difficult times like this: simply be present to each other through it all. "We are hanging on tighter to each other," Stacy says. "Right now, I'm picturing how he held me in the driveway. of my mother's now empty home Saturday afternoon while I wept. Fifth, build on your common values. Wendy and her husband, who live in San Francisco, bring our values into everyday interactions, she says. The couple's oldest child is in high school, and he grapples with making college decisions. Wendy enjoys how she and her husband are approaching their advice giving from the same perspective. They encourage their son to take the time to find and pursue his life's passions. If we didn't agree on this approach, she says, we'd be playing out our values battle through our son. Instead, we've grown closer. Number 6. Compliment each other in public. Telling others about your spouse's strengths reinforces the things you most love about each other. Keith, who lives in Santa Cruz, California, gives this advice to every couple, both newlyweds and the longtime married. Once I was in a large meeting explaining to a testy customer that if we planned correctly, we could meet their entire demand. He responded by asking me, "Are you telling me you have infinite capacity?" I answered, "Sir, the only thing in this universe I am sure has infinite capacity is my wife's patience." Everyone laughed, but I was serious. I'm fully aware every single moment of the day how thankful I am for her patience and love. And finally, learn and grow together. Wendy and her husband, who live in West Orange, New Jersey, celebrate their 48th anniversary this month. Her advice for newlyweds to attain long-term happiness is to cultivate a spirit of growth and leadership and learning in their relationship. Do something surprising and adventurous together, going to a yoga retreat, whitewater rafting, taking different courses, traveling, and having other learning experiences, she says. One of the best things my husband and I did was to go to Omega Institute, a holistic learning center, to take workshops. He initially didn't want to go, but later he became a big proponent, and we went maybe 10 times. We brought the kids. And here are 7 Bible verses for newlyweds. Number 1, I am beloved, and my beloved is mine. Song of Solomon 6:3. And over all these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Colossians 3:14. Number 3, I found the one my heart loves. Song of Solomon 3:4. Number 4, mercy, peace, and love be yours in abundance. Jude 1:2. Number 5, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Romans 12:10. Number 6, my command is this: love each other as I have loved you. John 15:12. And number 7, 2 are better than 1 because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10. And that's all the article advice for newlywed couples from Happily Married Couples from Guidepost. Next from Guidepost, 10 Easy Eco-Friendly Pantry Ideas by Holly Leibowitz Rossi. Get more for your money and do your part for the planet with these healthy kitchen maintenance habits. Everyone wants to keep their kitchen clean and stock a healthy pantry that offers nourishing food options year-round. You already do so much for your family's health, but could you also pay some kitchen attention to maintaining an eco-friendly pantry? First, smarten your storage. Whenever possible, use glass containers, including mason jars, to store spices, grains, and other pantry staples. The clear containers will show you when you're running low. Plastic food storage containers are a good second choice, though plastics are always less desirable from a planetary perspective. Second, extend your produce's shelf life. Storage isn't just about choosing the right containers. Produce, like root vegetables, potatoes, and apples, will last longer if they're stored at cool, dark places where exposure to light won't hasten their breakdown process. Apples, for example, can last up to 3 months if stored properly. Third, Manage storage temperatures. Some foods, like tomatoes, should never be refrigerated, while others, like cucumbers, stay fresh longer if they're stored in cold temps. Knowing where each food is happiest, spices should be stored away from direct light and heat, for example, will help you use your powered-up cooling appliances to their maximum benefit. Fourth, clean up your cleaning products. Most kitchen cleaning chores can be handled without harsh chemicals that come in plastic containers and put eco-unfriendly particles into the air and near your food. Seek out simple cleaning solution recipes, like mixing baking soda with white vinegar to make a foamy paste to scrub counters, sinks, and stovetops. Lemon juice, essential oils, and even coarse sea salt for scrubbing can clean out your cleaning routine. Fifth, grow and shop local. Whenever possible, grow your own vegetables or frequent your local farmer's market to minimize the distance your food travels from soil to plate. Sixth, shop in bulk. Most grocers will allow you to fill your own reusable containers with bulk items. This serves two eco-friendly purposes. It allows you to buy just what you need, and it saves you from buying new plastic containers for nuts, dried fruit, and grains. Seventh, repurpose your scraps. Vegetable peels, tea bags, check to make sure your brand doesn't contain plastic, coffee grounds, and other food scraps can be repurposed in two main ways. If you have a yard or town pickup service, compost them so you can invest today's scraps in tomorrow's gardens. And try saving vegetable peels like zucchini, carrots, or corn cobs for the vegetable stock pot. Eighth, put excess water to work. Collect water you've used to rinse or steam your veggies in a large bowl or tub for use watering plants, indoors or out. Just cool the water first and feel great that you're feeding your plants with vitamin-augmented H2O. Ninth, sharpen your knife skills. Grocery stores offer pre-cut vegetables, which is a wonderful innovation for the short on time among us. But if you're able, buying a whole butternut squash, for example, will save you both money and plastic, and your produce will last longer if you're not cooking it immediately. Tenth, share with your local food pantry. A quick web search or phone call can put you in touch with your local food pantry. Learn what they need most, and seek out items in your pantry that are near expiration or that you aren't likely to use in the near future. You'll be reducing your waste and feeding your neighbors at one go. And that's all the article, 10 Easy Eco-Friendly Pantry Ideas by Holly Leibowitz-Rossi from Guidepost Magazine. And our final article from Guidepost Magazine today is A Box of Memories Brought Him Closer to His Late Wife by Ted Stevenson. I sat alone on the back porch swing, my mind filled with thoughts of my wife, Jenny. This was one of our favorite places to spend time, listening to the birds sing, reliving the highlights from nearly 53 years of marriage, with three grown children and too many blessings to count. I looked over at the empty space next to me, sort of half expecting to see Jenny there. My wife had died a little over a week earlier from sepsis, her death sudden, unexpected. The reality of it all was still sinking in. Jenny had wanted us to add on this porch nearly from the day we'd moved into the house 9 years earlier. Finally, we'd made the investment. If I'd known we'd only have a year to enjoy it together, I wouldn't have waited so long. The porch seemed to draw out our most playful conversations. "I wonder when exactly we had our first date," Jenny would ask. "And when did we kiss for the very first time?" Such questions had become a kind of private joke between us in our golden years. Who could remember the specific details of happening so long ago? There was a time I could have surprised her with precise answers. However, I'd kept careful track of our young love. Ticket stubs, letters Jeannie and I had written to each other, silly mementos. I wish I'd been more organized or foreseen a day when a milestone date scribbled on a scrap of paper would mean the world to me. A connection that kept us close. Once Jenny was by my side, till death do us part, Being together forever was all that mattered. Forever was now, I thought. As a bird flew across the yard, what I wouldn't give to have all those answers. Thank goodness I'd finally relented and agreed to add on this porch when she teased me. But there was something else I'd put off despite Jenny's frequent request to see it through. We still had boxes stacked up against a wall in the garage, stuff we'd brought with us in our move, boxes still unopened. We didn't find ourselves needing anything that might be hidden in the mystery boxes, so clearing out the garage was never exactly a pressing chore. And I couldn't imagine sorting through 9-year-old boxes now. I resettled myself on the swing. Maybe I couldn't pinpoint the when for Jenny, but my memories were crystal clear. Jenny and I had first met in church while we were still in elementary school. I finally remembered being invited to her 13th birthday party, how we'd sung I Dream of Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, how smitten I was with her. We never dated anyone else, and our love grew deeper each year of our marriage. We shared a lively sense of humor and often took long drives to nowhere in particular, exploring the Indiana countryside, savoring the beauty of God's creation. For many years, Jenny worked as a teaching assistant at an elementary school, nurturing children with special needs. I was a pastor, and we committed our lives to service, family, and each other. In my mind, I heard her voice, the pleasure of hearing her say my name. I got up from the swing and I walked through the house in a kind of fog, my steps leading me to the garage. I opened the door. There against the wall was the tall stack of boxes, just where they'd stay untouched for the time being. One box had toppled over onto the floor, and the least I could do was set it back in place. I bent over to pick it up. Across the top, something long ago I'd written, Ted's Memorabilia. It was sealed with strips of old packing tape, yellowed and curled at the edges, covered in dust. I pulled off the tape and opened the box. It proved to be a treasure chest of notes, envelopes, receipts, ticket stubs. A faded flyer announced the week-long church camp Jenny and I attended when we were in junior high. She was 12 and I was 14. On the closing evening, I'd nervously invited her to sit with me at the celebratory banquet. She'd worn a beautiful pink dress, and I felt like the luckiest guy at camp. I didn't want the evening to come to an end. At the bottom of the flyer, I saw printed June 1959, our first date. Underneath the flyer was a piece of notepaper, a few sentences recorded in my youthful handwriting. Took Jenny to the junior dance. It read, I kissed her on the forehead, end of last song, March 4, 1961, a first kiss. Stapled to that message was another piece of paper, another memory preserved, this one 13 days after the dance. All I wanted was to return to Jenny and surprise her with the answers to her questions. She would have laughed with delight. I sat quietly with the old box that had held my memories in safekeeping all these years. This one box that had toppled to the floor on this day as if guided by some angelic hand. Someone else had been listening to my porch conversations with Jenny and my prayers to feel close to her now. I didn't need to tell Jenny the answers. God had let her tell me so that we could laugh together again. And that's all of the article, A Box of Memories Brought Him Closer to His Late Wife, from Guidepost Magazine. That's all the time we have this week for Spirituality, Motivation, and Inspiration. I'm Ansa Matthews for the Virginia Voice. This program is on the air every Sunday morning at 10 with a rebroadcast on Tuesday morning at 7:30. You can also listen anytime on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.